This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. This is Talk of Asian Marketing, and here we are again. This time we're talking about mechanics. Where can you get one when you need one? And we have today to talk about this topic with us Dr. Stephen Huang from Kaohsiung No. 1 University, Kaohsiung Di Keqi Dashi. I guess you guys call that in English. What's your school's name in English? I always get confused by it.
National Kaohsiung First.
National Kaohsiung First.
First University of Science and Technology.
Oh man, that's a mouthful.
Very long.
That's a real mouthful. And we also have here Dr. James Stanworth, who's a professor at the Business Administration Department at Tsinghua University of Education, and that's in central Taiwan, Tsinghua, but he's living down south in Tainan. James, how you doing?
I'm doing real good, and well, I've enjoyed motorcycles in the UK, and it was a real pleasure to come back to Taiwan and sit on two wheels again, so I'm really looking forward to talking about this topic with both of you today.
That's a great point. You know, I think you and I have something in common there. I was a motorcycle driver back in the U.S. and thoroughly enjoyed that. Of course, the size we were dealing with there is a little bit different. What was your motorcycle size there, James?
Well, I had an 800cc BMW touring bike, and I took it right around Europe, had a lot of fun.
Whoa.
And a Canadian was telling me the other day he rides a scooter here, like a 125cc, and his mum back in Canada has a 1200cc. He says it's really embarrassing when I have to tell my friends I drive something 10 times smaller than my mum. I seem to remember you too, Clyde, used to have a really big bike in the States.
Yeah, I used to do a ride on a Yamaha 750 Special, but that was back in the mid-80s. It was a big adjustment to come over here, that's for sure. But the strange thing is, I don't know, James, maybe confirm this, because I think a lot of listeners, maybe they'll see some video from Taiwan, and maybe I'll get some video of all the motorcycles here. It seems like a scary situation, but I find that when I'm driving here, because everyone drives motorcycles, I think people notice me a little bit more than they do in the States, where very few people drive motorcycles, and I'm always scared of getting just smashed.
Yeah, my experience, yes, is it's so normal here that people don't look at you too much, and the car drivers, yes, are a bit wary of crushing you as they turn right. As someone said to me, when you're riding a scooter here, it's just like gas molecules. If there's a little bit of space, someone will move in to fill that space. And as you drive along the road, it's like that kind of chaos of gas molecules filling up every little empty space around a car, in between a car, on the sidewalk, just everywhere. I think Taiwan has almost every human being here, there's two scooters on average. It's just crazy.
Yeah, at least for sure, every family has a couple. Steven, you ever ridden a big motorcycle?
No, I ride a 100.
You ride a 100, which is 10 times smaller than James' friend's mother's motorcycle.
Very smaller. Yeah, and maybe 50 sometimes.
50 sometimes.
50 cc, right. Yeah.
Yeah, those are the normal sizes here, 50s and 100s. Yep. When I very first came to Taiwan, I rode around a little 50, and when I came to stay back in 89, I got myself an on-road, off-road Yamaha DT, which was really quite fun. That was a 125. But over time, I think the market's changed a lot, and then we've gotten more and more choices. And James has just recently bought a motorcycle. He's bought a big kind of scale scooter. I don't know what their special names are, but it's a nice big, what was it, a 250 you got, James?
That's right. Yes, I like you guys. I'd ridden around on a 50. In fact, when I first came, and then my mother-in-law rides on a 50. My wife rides a 125, Most of my friends have 125s, and my 125 scooter just died recently, and I kind of yearn for something just a bit bigger again. I must have pleased my wife, who looks after the budget in the household, and she said, well, you can go get something a bit bigger. So I kind of traded up to a 250 scooter, secondhand, got a good deal up in Taipei, and I just love it. It's just great.
Yeah, I drive a similar style bike. These are the big scooters, I think. They must have a special name. I just don't know what they are. I think if you go to the U.S. or maybe even in the U.K., these are the only kinds of scooters you often see, these bigger ones. But a lot of the Taiwan companies recently have been making headway into the overseas market. And so today we're going to talk about the domestic market, specifically about mechanics and how to get things repaired, because there's a big contrast with the American and U.K. markets, I think. And so the first point, of course, is there's just scooters everywhere. James mentioned everybody has at least one. I think every family has a few, at least. Stephen, how many motorcycles in your family?
Three. Yeah, we had three.
And let's make it clear, they all function, right? I mean, in the U.S. you can have many motorcycles, but most of them are not running.
But because I have two motorcycles, and the other one is the other one belongs to my my brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your brother, yeah. Yeah, I think it's really normal for women to have their motorcycles to get around on, men and even college kids, they all get motorcycles, don't they?
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, I just alone have I've got three scooters. One's on loan to a friend. One is in Changhua, where I work, so it's real convenient to go from the train station to my office. And then I keep one here in Tainan, where I live, to go around the city and go out of the city as well. And yeah, that's not
the whole
uncommon.
You're a motorcycle shop right there, James. You're
James, you, I'm the same as you. You do.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was teaching in Tainan.
Ah. Yes.
Stephen, you live in Kaohsiung, but you were teaching in Tainan before, so you kept the motorcycle in Tainan, did you? Just for your arrival for work?
Yes, yes.
That's beautiful. That's you know, it's just, you couldn't imagine, I think, James, that you would keep maybe a 900 or a 750 or 1,000cc motorcycle at the outskirts of London just for you to come in for work. Do you think anybody does that?
Only if you want to ride it once, the day when you park it, and when you come back in the evening, it's going to be gone.
Yeah, right, exactly. It'll be permanently gone. Yeah, that's another show, theft. But yeah, this is really interesting. There's so many of them. But I was always surprised to look at the price point for these motorcycles, especially these smaller ones. 50s are so common. Now you get a little bit more of 100s because it used to be the 50s were two strokes. Now they're all four strokes because of the pollution control regulation. Yes. And of course, a four stroke, you don't get as much energy out of it. So they've bumped a lot of them up. It's real common to have the 100s now. So 50s and 100s. And I thought these things would be cheap because they are tiny. I mean, just to get two people on that thing is really a squeeze. But it's very common in Taiwan. You can see families of three or four people on them. It's an amazing balancing act. But these motorcycles are not what I would call a very low or cheap price point. James, you got some feelings on some of these prices?
It's interesting because when I first came over to live here, I looked around for a secondhand scooter, and I checked out the market a little bit, and I was really surprised when I checked some price points for like new scooters. Like a 125 scooter, I guess, would be in the base model, might start at 40,000 Taiwanese dollars and go up to say 60,000.
So that's around 1,500 to 2,000 US dollars right there.
That's right. And then I said, well, that's kind of expensive. I've always bought secondhand. So I checked the secondhand market, and I was really surprised that you could buy like a 10-year-old scooter, nothing particularly sporty, an average 10-year-old scooter that had been ridden fairly hard with maybe 40,000 kilometers on the clock for maybe just under $20,000. So over 10 years, basically, it had only depreciated by half. They really hold their values very, very well. And I think part of that is because it's so easy and repairs are so effective here. It's just part of everyday life.
Yeah, so you don't really see them totally falling apart even after 10 years.
Exactly, and they're still holding their value in a really, really strong way. And I don't think there can be, maybe Stephen's got some views on this, I don't think there's a very strong regulation of bike safety. So as long as your bike moves, the government don't insist on very high safety standards for testing road safety for your scooter. So scooters just seem to run and run and run for basically till they're absolutely just won't move anymore. I don't know, Stephen, are there any particular regulations for road worthiness or road safety of scooter? Do you have to ever have them tested at all?
Well, I know there's you have to have your pollution control checked now. That started about 5 or 6 years back to be enforced, right? They even randomly stop people on the road to check your exhaust emissions for the pollution, and you have to get a sticker. And if you don't have that, you get a fine. But I've never had I don't think there's a yearly check for your motorcycle's maintenance. Is there, like in the U.S., you have to get your car inspected or your motorcycle inspected? James, I guess you have to do the same thing in the U.K.?
In the UK, each year, once a bike's over 3 years old, it has to be checked for roads kind of safety. And they check things like the brakes and corrosion and just the basic functions of the bike to make sure that it's not actually dangerous for the person riding it or using it. But I've never had mine checked here.
Stephen, is there a checkup for motorcycles like that?
Yes, 5 years. If the expiration of your bike license.
Yeah,
you
you're
have
right.
To check.
Yeah. Now I remember that because I have to every time your ownership card, the little blue card, every time that expires, you do need to go get it checked. You know, the thing is.
Yes.
My mechanics, which were what we're talking about, there's regular guys I go to, two brothers, they just looked at it and just signed me off and filled out my card for me. It was so fast and easy, I didn't even remember it.
Yeah,
likewise. Someone told me, and I learned this by accident in a police station when I had my bicycle stolen, and they said you needed to update the card, and I went the next day, and while I just went to get my lunch, the guys did the paperwork and it was finished. So I don't think they even saw the scooter. It wasn't even there.
They didn't even ever see it, but they still filled out the paperwork on your motorcycle was stolen. You said bicycle.
Motorcycle, yes, sorry. Yeah,
so they filled out the paperwork for something they should have seen and they had never even seen it.
That's right. It wasn't even physically there.
That's great. That's great. So I think that this all points to really the demand in the market. It's just so huge. These motorcycles, the low-end ones, they don't sell for especially low price points. They retain their value. Even when you're in the used market, they're still pretty high, and especially considering local salaries, they're not cheap. And the reason is, I think it's just this huge demand for it, this never-ending demand. Now, the three big players in the market complain that the Taiwan market's kind of plateaued and they're not growing sales a lot. But still, it's just a huge demand. Everybody's using them all of the time. And I think that's what supports this kind of thing, where they're not too worried about the safety regulations, although we do have more and more the pollution thing. But otherwise, everyone's got one. They're doing it all the time. So that leads to the repair shops, which is basically, James, Stephen, right? Every corner, every street has at least one repair shop.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I live in a tall block here, and right down from my place, like 5 minutes walk from here, there's one on the front of the block, there's one on the back of the block, there's one on the corner of the block, and that's just this one fairly large building. And then in the next block too, there's a couple around the building as well. So it's really so convenient if you want to go get your scooter, say the oil change, some basic maintenance. It's like 1 minute from your house to go and get something done. It's really super convenient, and they're just everywhere. Everywhere where there's a density of people, like around my place, there's four or five just serving this block.
Well, let me ask you, James, since you mentioned you've got these right around your corner, can you picture the shop, and then can you name which brand it is?
Yeah, mine sells, it's got a big brand label outside for Kimco.
Kimco, and which Kimco is the market leader in Taiwan.
Yes, these guys, I think, sell the most scooters in Taiwan. They're a local indigenous company that manufactures and sells scooters right here, yes.
Yeah, Kimco is the market leader, and of course these days they're working hard to work on their export market. But yeah, mm-hmm. So you can actually link up the brand name with the shop. You know, to be honest, my shop I go to, I'm a little bit, I'm not sure which brand it is. It doesn't seem like brand plays a major role in the repair shops, outside of when you actually buy your motorcycle. So if you go to one of these shops, you'll see the sign out front, and we've got some pictures on the website. So picture number one clearly is a Yamaha, and picture number two is a Sim, which is Sanyong.
Sanyong.
And Stephen, I'm sorry, I thought Sanyong originally was a Honda joint venture, but now they're totally on their own, aren't they?
Uh-huh, why?
Yeah, they're everywhere. And, you know, so this is Sanyong and Yamaha and Kimco are the really big players. And I guess when you go to buy your motorcycle, if you go to a Yamaha shop, you're only going to get Yamaha. If you go to a Sim shop, you're only going to get Sim. And if you go to a Kimco shop, you're only going to get Kimco. But a key point is any shop will repair any brand, unless you guys have had a different experience.
Exactly that, yes. I mean, I took my Yamaha scooter to the Kimco shop. The Sanyong Sim scooter goes to the same shop. And the Kimco scooter goes all to the same shop. And the guy seems just absolutely comfortable to service and work on them without batting an eyelid, basically. But I remember in UK, I had all my tools and I'd get to work happily on my scooter, servicing, tuning, working on it. Maybe you did the same in the States, Clyde.
Oh, yeah, totally. In fact, I had a little project, a little hobby on the side where I had a little 125. I ripped it down and I had bought some new parts and was rebuilding the engine myself. And that was my weekend hobby, which my wife found to be quite absurd.
And here I was trying to think, I've literally never unscrewed a screw on my scooter, and I think that's probably fairly typical of most Taiwanese, that they just wouldn't even dream of doing any kind of DIY work on their scooter at all. How about you, Stephen? Have you ever sort of done any maintenance or screwed a screw or done anything like that on your scooter?
Sometimes, but most of the time I went to these shops for service.
Mm. Yeah, well, what about a simple thing like an oil change? I think, you know, in the U.S., obviously most people, I shouldn't say most, but most of my friends I know, and I think, James, you're probably the same, you just wouldn't pay the kind of money you need to get an oil change when you can just go do it yourself. Steve,
yeah, I do it by myself, but some kind of the motorcycle needs the special special treatment. I mean, use the special tool, like a 125.
Yeah, right.
Motorcycle.
Yeah, some special tools to get access to some of them. So, Steve, do you think a lot of people actually do things like change their motorcycle oil themselves?
For the 50 motorcycle, the riders will do it by themselves because it's more easier. It's easier for the riders, right? But one, two, five, or larger ones, they need a service from the mechanics.
It's interesting you say that, because I've never seen anyone change their oil here. The places where I've lived and my own in-laws, I've never seen anyone change.
Yeah, maybe. But okay, the Taiwanese go to the gas station. They can buy the oil from the gas station, and if they buy the oil from the gas station, they will do it by themselves.
Gotcha. Yeah. You see the oil piled there. Yeah, it's all in the windows of the gas station.
Yes. But if they go to motorcycle shops, then they will ask the mechanics to do for them.
Gotcha. Let's make sure we're talking about the same thing here, because on a lot of the 50s, if you have a 50 that's a two-stroke, you need to add oil. Right, because that gets burned up in the cylinders. So we're talking about you take out the old oil and put in the new oil.
I find that for the 50 that my wife has, sometimes she puts the oil in herself, because like you say, Stephen, that's really easy to do. Sometimes though, my mother-in-law with her 50 just gets the servicing guys, even for the 50, just to pour the oil in for her, and so nothing makes a big mess.
Right, so on your wife's, James, it's a 50 that's a two-stroke, and you just add the oil in. You don't actually take any oil out, right?
Well, yes, exactly. Just for the gearbox oil, she'll take it to get that service done.
Yeah, I think we should make this clear, because I probably should get a link to Wikipedia to talk about the difference between two-stroke and four-stroke engines, right?
Mm.
A two-stroke engine, you add oil, and that oil gets burned up with the gas in the engine. And these are not sold anymore, actually, in Taiwan. These are now illegal, or outside of the regular regulations, because of the emissions problem. So you'll see people who do drive their two-strokes, and they don't add that oil. And if they don't, then their engine overheats, and you get this big clouds of smoke just following behind them. I'm sure you're always running into that, James.
Well, I'm embarrassed to say that I used to have exactly that. When I first got here, we had one old 50 scooter that I think had got ditched by a friend of the family on us, and I used to ride round, and people used to just hate me because it was like a huge cloud coming out that sort of blocked the vision of everyone that followed me.
You're one of the smoke makers. Gosh.
I felt so embarrassed after like 2 days. I went and got it fixed, and the guy in my scooter repair store was just so efficient. He just told me within like a minute of looking what the problem was. And after lunch, by the time I'd eaten a quick noodle lunch, I was back. He'd fixed it, and I was away smoke-free.
There you go.
Fast, efficient. Yeah.
So that leads right into our repair shop. So we got these repair shops everywhere, and they're so convenient, and you just have so many things you can just stop in and get done. James, you have a shop you regularly go to, because I have one where I have two brothers. I go there, and these guys were just great. They were even especially trained at a technical vocational university, and I just walk in and get anything done. Is that your experience also?
Yeah, that's my experience. In fact, in picture 15 that we've got here on the web, picture 15 and 16, this is the shop where I go regularly to get my scooters looked after. It's just downstairs in my block, so I literally just go down to the basement and ride for all of 10 seconds up the road to this guy. In the family, we informally call him the Scooter King, because he's just so knowledgeable. Whatever you drive in with, you explain the little problem, the symptoms, and immediately straight on to telling you what the problem is. And the really nice thing is that he tells us, for example, recently I had a problem with my scooter and explained that he could replace it with a new part that would cost me like $1,000 Taiwanese, or he could use a second-hand part that would be probably almost as good and it would cost like a third of the price. And right away he'll get along and fix it. If he's really super busy, then he might ask you to drop back in an hour or so. But really efficient. And like you say, he in his store, he's got these training certificates right up on the wall. And I don't know if they're from the Technical Vocational College, but certainly certificates of training. And visibly, he really knows what he's doing. The store's really nice because he works with his wife, and I think that's not an untypical kind of situation. Like you mentioned, Clyde, you've got two brothers that work together. This chap works with his wife, and they've got a little kid now who is all of about three, who comes and helps Dad, brings him the spanners as he does the repairs. So fairly sure soon I think he's going to do my routine oil change that I go there every 1,000 kilometers or so to have done. So
yeah, I think
nice
your observation
experience.
Is a good one. I think on picture 13 and 14, I got a bicycle shop, which are not easy to find anymore. But when I first came to Taiwan in the mid-80s, they were everywhere. And these two are kind of houses where the first floor is the shop and then upstairs where people live. And I think one thing that's kind of led to the motorcycle shops being everywhere is there used to be bicycle shops, and slowly they move into the motorcycle business. And in picture 14, the owner's, he's got a bicycle shop, but he's actually repairing a motorcycle wheel. So this kind of dual repair situation, and then they've all moved into motorcycle shops and family businesses. Stephen, do you have a shop that you often go to? It sounds so great to say, I have a mechanic, doesn't it, James? Because only rich people in the West would have their own mechanic. And you and me, we've got our mechanics.
That's right. In the UK, if you say you have a mechanic, then someone would really imagine that you've probably got 10 Mercedes parked in your basement.
Yeah, exactly right. Instead, we've got 10 scooters parked in the basement, and our mechanic is the king of motorcycles. Stephen, do you have a regular shop you go to?
Yes, yes.
Do you like know the guys there, or can you talk to them?
Yep, my mechanician. Okay.
Yeah, you've got your own mechanic too, huh?
Yeah, yeah. My mechanic is very professional, and he's older than these two guys. Shop in the James P. Photos. He's around 50 years old, and he's very very professional. He knows everything about the motorcycle. And if I have a problem and I go to the other shop, the mechanic will tell me to replace the parts.
But even though you might not need them replaced?
Actually, most of the case, we don't need to replace the a lot of the parts. But just fix some problem.
Yeah. Yes, okay? That's my experience too. They're very good at...
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, they're just really good at just focusing on just the things you need changing. Not too much, not too little. Yes, yes. Sorry, go ahead. I thought that was such a great point.
Mm. No, I think what Stephen's getting at is really a good point, that there are a lot of shops out there where you go and they say replace this, replace that, and you don't really need it. And so it's good, it's really an effort. I've gone through, I think the time I've been in Taiwan over a couple decades, I've gone through quite a number of shops. And the place I buy my motorcycle is not necessarily related to where I'm going to take it for maintenance, because you really want to get that place, like James is saying and Steven's saying, you don't want to get the guys that are just charging you too much and making you change everything. And so I think that leads to the point that there's so many of these repair shops. The market's really saturated with them. But the standardization of the service is really not there. Just totally different service from different shops. Some guys I find are trained, and they've taken, as James' example, some certificates from the company, such as Yamaha. But others don't have that. Some have an education in technical vocational school, and others don't have anything like that. They just picked it up on them by themselves. And it always makes me nervous when I go to a shop and they just start cracking open that engine. And in fact, a number of people say, once you take it to a shop and the engine gets open, it'll never be the same again.
Yeah.
Really?
I don't know how typical it is, but we have a really good relationship with the Skoda repair that you can see in picture 15 and 16. My wife bought or helped to buy my sister-in-law's Skoda there, and it gave us a very favorable purchase price and purchasing deal. And then he's always been absolutely trustworthy and gives great advice on what to change, just like Stephen's example, really economic with part replacement and absolutely 100% trustworthy. Once he gets his spanner and cracks open the engine, I feel really safe that nothing weird's going to happen, and I'm going to still have a really rideable scooter after he's worked on it.
Well, you found a good one there, James. I think I've finally gotten a good one myself, and the video is going to be of these two brothers at my shop, so I'll let you guys see what these two brothers look like. And I always have a lot of fun going there. I trust them a lot, just like you do in your shop, James, and yours, Stephen. I think the interesting thing about the market economically is that clearly the money on the new scooters is mostly made by the manufacturer. So Yamaha, SsangYong, Kymco, they're making their cash flow on the new sales, whereas the shop, I'm told, everyone I've talked to, they don't make anything on those new motorcycles, and they make everything on the repair business. And so that's why they're so open to take any brand to come in for repairs. So personally, I think the market has some opportunity. If one of these companies were to come in and really standardize their training a bit, standardize their repairs, their replacement parts, and maybe emphasize a little bit more on their own brand, they may be able to get a loyal following. Whereas right now, we just pull in anywhere, or we develop a relationship just based on the person, not based on the company. And this is quite different from the automobile dealers, which have developed that kind of professionalism. If you buy Nissan, you go back to the Nissan dealer, and they're really trained on that Nissan stuff. And you can't pull in there with a Mitsubishi. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but one of the reasons for the repair shops to fix any kind of any brands, just as you say, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason is maybe the reason is the standardization of the motorcycle.
So you mean even across brand standardization is very high?
Yeah. Because every part of any brand is very similar.
Yeah. I think this is a great point that Stephen's hitting on. I think this is really the nub of the issue that. You know, the basic technology of the scooter, my impression is that the technology between a Kymco, a Sim, even a Yamaha, the basic core technology is now almost the same. And so it's really easy for a mechanic to just change a little bit what he does, or maybe something opens in a slightly different way, but he can soon spot that and get very familiar with it very, very fast. So, like my scooter mechanic, and we see how quickly we're talking about my scooter mechanic.
Your mechanic, yeah. you're just trying to make us jealous of you.
But I am. It's really fluid. Whatever comes, whether it's a Kymco, a Sim, a Yamaha, he doesn't hesitate. He sees the scooter coming. Someone's told him what he needs doing. He just reaches down for the tool that he needs, and he's just straight on to it. So I think this is the big deal that, as Stephen said, that mechanically I think they're so similar that it's no big deal whatever comes into the store.
Also, now, I think the channel there, James, you know, your guy, he can take any motorcycle, and I find that they just send somebody out or just make a phone call, and they can get any part they need from any manufacturer just in a few minutes.
Yeah, right.
Yes, likewise, yes, I've had that experience that he's got all the name cards, and he might have to wait for an hour or something to get a part, but it's there. The thing is to try and understand what makes a consumer loyal in this marketplace. I mean, I know I'm very loyal to this scooter guy because he only replaces what is really needed, and he's demonstrated continuously that he fixes my scooter up so it's reliable, and I don't get a huge bill each time. In fact, another really interesting observation is that his question always, however long he's spent with my scooter, he says, "What have I changed?" And you tell him a couple of things, and then he tells you the price. You say, "Well, you haven't actually changed anything, but you fixed up the indicator where there was a faulty connection." You say, "Oh, you don't need to pay for that, no problem." So I think that's another important observation on the pricing and what they expect you to pay for. I think when there's a physical product, when he's changed the oil, when he's put in a new component, he expects you to pay. But the service part, I think, is what he feels is his investment in the relationship and making me feel good about coming back again and again. Maybe you, Clyde, or Stephen have got some observations on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's that service orientation we get that really makes us loyal, and it really has nothing to do with the brand. It's really the shop owner, and I've seen that so many times where you get things done and they don't ask for a fee, and that was hard for me to adjust to at first when I first got here, but now you get used to it. Stephen, do you get things done and they don't ask for money always?
Right. The small fees, right.
Yeah, small things, or they just fix something up, and it's easy to go back and work things out. And even when I get major repairs done, I can go back, and they're pretty willing to follow up without, you know, I feel in America, at least, every detail they got to check out. And a lot of times you go back, it's not the same guy working there. That's another problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So for looking at the future, it doesn't seem then that there's a whole lot of opportunity for any foreign firms to get into this, since it's already been kind of dominated by the Japanese cooperation ventures, and then the Taiwan companies taking it over. So I don't see a lot of opportunity, but one place we do see things changing is because of the entry into the WTO, the big motorcycles getting into the market. These are motorcycles 500cc and up. And I just went by where I go to school. There's a Ducati dealer now, an Italian motorcycle maker, which is really, really interesting because they don't have huge market share, but I've got one near my house somehow. And BMW, I have a picture. Let me see. It's a BMW shop.
Yeah.
Picture number 5, I think it is. 4 and 5. Now, BMW has been in Taiwan a long time. Yeah, 4. 4. 4 is outside. 5 is in a little bit zooming inside. BMW has been around a long time. The big BMWs the police actually use. And so they've been here a long time. So you can still see these traditional BMW shops. But for all the other dealers with their big motorcycles, they're opening up big dealers that are kind of modeled on the American, UK kind of standardization and on the car dealership. So maybe that's going to change or split the market a little bit, where you have your small shops for your utility, but then you have these big dealers. And if you buy at a BMW dealer, a big motorcycle, you're definitely going back there. And so that kind of is bifurcate or split the market in the motorcycle market. James, any thoughts on that?
The bike market in terms of big motorcycles is a very small group, because you're talking of a very large purchase equivalent of a car, basically. And so lines like BMW can take, if you've spent the equivalent of car money, then you're going to almost certainly want to take it back to get your proverbial baby looked after by a real specialist.
Yeah, I think we're not talking utility here. We're definitely talking self-expression, hedonistic consumption. And I've seen a few Harley Davidsons on the roads, and these guys really get into their self-expression, no doubt about it. But you know what else I've seen is a lot of group getting together for riding on the bigger motorcycles. So I've seen guys with big Yamaha Suzukis, and they've got the whole leather outfit, the whole racing getup, and they get together in groups. And we all know group activity is really popular in Taiwan, and that may be where that market really has an opportunity.
Yes.
Maybe more so than that really just total self-expression, which is kind of a big thing in America and the UK, but these groups, these clubs getting together. So,
yes.
And then, of course, you go back to the shop where your club hangs out, right? I mean, you have a club shop and you all go back there, or you have a place where you kind of get your club together. So opportunities for companies like Harley-Davidson, where they emphasize this kind of group and getting together with the group, I think their chances in the China market is really, really good. Of course, nothing like the scooter market, as James points out, but still good because that group thing is so clear. In fact, out of all the big motorcycle companies I was checking out, only Harley-Davidson has an easy way on their front homepage to click and get the whole thing in Chinese.
Oh, wow. Yes, I really think that on this sense, and particularly now just in Taiwan, where they've just recently changed the law so that if you own a big bike over 550cc, you can take it onto the freeway. I think this is going to be something that will sort of boost people's interest in owning big bikes. And often when you go out down to the South Coast or some of these kind of more tourist spots, sometimes you see big groups of these big bikes out riding together, not as a sort of aggressive thing, but it's very much a group thing where people probably have it as just a leisure kind of bike that they take out just purely for pleasure. They go out as a big group and they do a tour around and then put it away again.
Yeah,
I
absolutely
think that's going to be a big deal. Grow sort of probably a small growth area.
Yeah, definitely. It's not a huge market, but I think there's enough people that have that money and they really like their group activity. And business owners, even managers and companies can get together and do these things. I think it's very common, and this would be something people would do now that we are able to do it before it was, of course, illegal. So opportunities there. But in the mechanics market, I think that's probably fairly saturated. And to be honest, I really wish I had service like this back in the U.S. when I needed something done on a small car or a scooter. That's just impossible to find these days.
Absolutely, and if you probably have the same experience, Clyde. As soon as you take it to one of these garages, then the clock starts ticking and the money starts flowing. And even if you say you just want your bike inspected in the UK now, then that's $3,000 NT dollars just gone for them to check something out for you. So there's just not that same culture like here where they'll inspect your bike, and even if you take it in for a routine oil change, they check the tires, the brakes, your lights are all functioning. That's all part of routine service that you don't actually pay for.
Yeah, just the regular service they give you, right? Because they would be very embarrassed if you went out and there was something basic wrong. You'd come right back and talk to the same guy you were talking to. So I think that we're going to wrap it up here, but just to go to this point, Walmart did try to do a whole car repair section back in the late 80s, early 90s, and they spent a lot of money on it. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but the problem was mechanics, you need to have that skill, right? And that's really what we're talking about. We got a good mechanic. Yes. And it's hard to standardize. And of course, Walmart's thing is standardization, getting price down. And they just couldn't get there. And these guys are charged by the hour. And as James says, you're just running up the clock. It's really hard to fit into the Walmart model. On the other hand, they did, at the same time, they invested in pharmacies where you need really professional trained people, pharmacists. They're not much different than doctors in training. And yet that was a huge success. I think the difference is when you're talking about pharmacists, they're self-managed. They're self-quality controlled. Mechanics, that's not so much the case. Plus, the problems that come into a garage are very heterogeneous, all different kinds of things. The things that come into a pharmacy are much more standardized because it's part of the whole medical system. So in Taiwan, I think what we have is that heterogeneity is taken care of by having shops everywhere and, buyer go there and choose what you like.
and super convenient. Outside your house.
Right outside your house. Sometimes on the first floor from your building. All right, we'll wrap it up there. Steven, any final comments?
No.
Okay, that keeps it simple. Yeah. Mm-hmm. James, any final thoughts?
When are you going to go and buy that Ducati, Clyde? I want to ride.
That. I'm not sure my wife would go for that. I got a little bit of envy over your bike, so I'm going to slowly work my way up there. I'm still on my Yamaha 150, a similar design to yours, James, but I would certainly like to move up.
Great.
Sigh.
that's what guys are obsessed with, eh? Yeah,
exactly. Okay, great show, guys. So we'll see each other next time when we have a next topic and something interesting and some good pictures and video. See y'all later. This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Meow, 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 meow